Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakti Vindikidna. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda. Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Maya Pur Navadvip Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vindikidna. Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sisi Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Today we're reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 9, Lord Chaitanya Travels to the Holy Places, texts number 97 and 98. I'll do 97 and then we can do 98 together. Mahaprabhu Puchila Tanri Suna Mahasaya Konarta Janito Mara Eta Sukahaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the Brahmin, "My dear sir, why are you in such ecstatic love? Which portion of Bhagavad Gita gives you transcendental pleasure?" Then we can do this one together, 98. Viprakahe murka ami sura. No, I'll do it first, then everybody follow the way we usually. Viprakahe murka ami sudartha na jani. Suda suda gita padi guru agnyamani. Viprakahe murka ami sabdartha na jani. Sudha sudha gita padi guru agnyamani. Viprakahe murka ami sabdartha na jani. Sudha sudha gita padi guru agnyamani. Viprakahe murka ami sabdartha na jani. Sudha sudha gita padi guru agnyamani. Viprakahe murka ami sabdartha na jani. Sudha sudha gita padi guru agnyamani. Ladies. Viprakahe murka ami sabdartha na jani. Sudha sudha gita padi guru agnyamani. Viprakahe. The Brahmin replied, "Murka ami, I am illiterate. Sabda artha, the meaning of the words. Na jani, I do not know. Sudha, sometimes correct and sometimes not correct. Gita, Bhagavad Gita. Padi, I read. Guru Agnya, the order of my spiritual master. Mani, accepting." Translation. The Brahmin replied, I am illiterate and therefore do not know the meaning of the words. Sometimes I read Bhagavad Gita correctly and sometimes incorrectly. But in any case, I am doing this in compliance with the orders of my spiritual master. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a good example of a person who had become so successful that he was able to capture the attention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even while reading Bhagavad Gita incorrectly. His spiritual activities did not depend on material things, such as correct pronunciation. Rather, his success depended on strictly following the instructions of his spiritual master. Yasya devi para bhaktir yatha devi tata guru tasya ite katita hyata prakashante mahatmana. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.23. Actually, the meanings of the words of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam are revealed to one strictly following the orders of the spiritual master. They are also revealed to one who has equal faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, being faithful to both Krishna and the spiritual master is the secret of success in spiritual life. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Sharakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. So this story is a continuing pastime that we've been reading for some weeks now. And going back to 993, I'll read some verses which will bring us up to date as a review. Lord Chaitanya's travel to South India, it was even described before what I'm going to read, that he traveled to Sri Rangam, Sri Rangakshetra. And it was described previously that he and Venkata Bhat met together, one of the persons who lived there, and that man, that Brahmin, invited him to remain in his home for the 4 months of the rainy season during the monsoon. So with that prelude, we can understand that Lord Chaitanya is going to the temple in Sri Rangam daily. It's not that he just is traveling and happened to come to this temple one day and noticed what's going on. He actually saw this go on a regular basis, and therefore it caught his attention, as we'll see. In that holy place of Sri Rangakshetra, a Brahmin Vaishnav used to visit the temple daily and recite the entire text of Bhagavad Gita. The Brahmin regularly read the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita in great transcendental ecstasy. But because he could not pronounce the words correctly, people used to joke about him. Due to his incorrect pronunciation, people sometimes criticized him and laughed at him. But he did not care. He was full of ecstasy due to reading Bhagavad Gita and was personally very happy. While reading the book, the Brahmin experienced transcendental bodily transformations. His hair stood on end, tears welled up in his eyes, and his body trembled and perspired as he read. Seeing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very happy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked that Brahmin, "Oh, my dear sir, why are you in such ecstatic love? Which portion of Bhagavad Gita gives you such transcendental pleasure?" So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to do was spark up a discussion of what part of Bhagavad Gita is making you feel so ecstatic and so much transcendental pleasure. But the Brahmin replied in this verse that we read today, "I'm illiterate and therefore do not know the meanings of the words. Sometimes I read Bhagavad Gita correctly and sometimes incorrectly. But in any case, I'm doing this in compliance with the orders of my spiritual master." Now, it's a beautiful verse in Bhagavad Gita, which expands this concept and explains it a little more. So we want to read Bhagavad Gita 13:26. We'll start with English, Madan. "Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. her play. This verse is particularly applicable to modern society, because in modern society, there's practically no education in spiritual matters. Some of the people may appear to be atheistic or agnostic or philosophical, but actually there is no knowledge of philosophy. I was just reading, this part caught my attention. We have a book called Chant and Be Happy, where Srila Prabhupada is talking with John Lennon, George Harrison, and Yoko Ono from the Beatles. And he asked them, what is your philosophy of life, if you don't mind my asking? Who are you following? What philosophy of life are you following? And Yoko Ono answers, we're not following anyone. We're just living. So most people think that they're just living, not really realizing that they've been led to believe certain things in their life are correct and that they should follow them. And we see that when that happens around the world, sometimes cultures conflict with one another. In our modern day, we have the Middle East and the United States. Now, people brought up in one country might think, I'm not following anybody with a gun in their hand and ready to go shoot foreigners, because they've been taught that they live a different way. Whereas in America, they're thinking, oh, those people in the Middle East following the Muslims, they're all nonsense, violent people that want to blow themselves and others up. Where in actuality, if you kind of zoomed out of Earth and looked down, both of them are wrong. So everybody's following something because of our conditioning, and we'll talk a little bit about that further. As for the common man, if he is a good soul, then there's a chance for advancement by hearing. This hearing process is very important. Lord Chaitanya, who preached Krishna consciousness in the modern world, gave great stress to hearing because if the common man simply hears from authoritative sources, he can progress, especially, according to Lord Chaitanya, if he hears the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is stated, therefore, that all men should take advantage of hearing from realized souls and gradually become able to understand everything. The worship of the Supreme Lord will then undoubtedly take place. Lord Chaitanya said that in this age, no one needs to change his position, but one should give up the endeavor to understand the absolute truth by speculative reasoning. One should learn to become the servant of those who are in knowledge of the Supreme Lord. If one is fortunate enough to take shelter of a pure devotee, hear from him about self-realization, and follow in his footsteps, one will gradually be elevated to the position of a pure devotee. In this verse particularly, the process of hearing is strongly recommended, and this is very appropriate. Although the common man is often not capable, as so-called philosophers, faithful hearing from an authoritative person will help one transcend this material existence and go back to Godhead, back to home. So as I meditated on this verse and concept, I realized that it not only applies to spiritual topics, it applies to practically anything. If you want to find out something that you don't know, go to somebody who does know it, and you can just inquire from them and find out. But oftentimes we think that we know better. One of the more famous examples is men when they're driving in a location where they don't know where they are. I had a similar one recently with my car. I bought a new tire about a year ago, and when the guy put it on, all of a sudden it was like you could hear it spinning. It made like a hum noise in the car while we were driving. And it went on for about a year, and then time went on and I needed a whole set of new tires. So I figured, why not just replace that tire as well, get the whole set. And after they put on the tires, the Goodyear good tires, the hum was still there. So I was thinking, wow, what nonsense. And I wrote to Goodyear that, you know, this isn't what I wanted, so I want a refund. And they wrote back that, no problem, take the car to one of our authorized service centers and have it checked, because we don't know your car and we don't know what's wrong with those tires. So I brought the car to the Goodyear place, and they drove it around for about 5 minutes and came back and said, it's not the tires, it's the bearing in the wheel. So they changed the bearing in the wheel, no more sound. So I didn't know that. It was my illusion that that was the problem, because simultaneously, by coincidence, when I put on the tire, the bearing went. Who knew? So in life, oftentimes we don't know something, but we think we know it. So what that brings us to is a concept where we have beliefs, but we want to change. What we're hearing about here is a person who can't even really read or understand properly, but he's been told by his spiritual master to do something. And by that order, by following it, he's come to the position where he's actually finding pleasure in transcendence. Now, if we look at society in general, it gives me a better picture of how to see how consciousness and belief transform over time. It's in baby steps. It doesn't happen like all of a sudden you hear something, like when the guy told me that the bearing was bad. I sort of wondered, is he trying to pull a fast one on me so that he can change the bearing and get paid for it? So I was sitting there for the couple hours that they worked on it and didn't really believe him until I drove the car and didn't hear the spin anymore. Then I believed it. So when we first hear something, oftentimes we might not really believe it, but we'll go along with it and see if it pans out. So one of the examples that I like is when Columbus lived during the late 1400s, the concept of was that the world was flat. So when he left Spain and on boats and started going out into the ocean, many people thought, well, there goes Columbus, he's going over the edge. But months later, he came back and said that there's land on the other side of the ocean. Now, it's not that everybody went, oh, wow, the world must be round. They thought that, oh, it must be flat further out. Because the world, and it took over 100 years for society to realize, because Magellan, Ponce de Leon, so many different explorers went around the world and started to map it. Then they started to see it differently. So their belief system was one thing, and by gradual experience and transformation, they came to see it as something else. Another famous one is Galileo. Galileo was an astronomer, and he propounded a heliocentric concept that the sun was the middle of the universe. It's of our solar system. It's kind of the one that's modern day, that the sun is in the middle and all these planets are moving around it. Galileo, when he presented this in his scientific books, immediately bumped up against the preconceived idea that the Earth was the center of the universe and it was stable and all the other planets were moving around it, because that was people's sensual experience. You sit on Earth and you see everything moving around you, right? All the planets, the sun, the moon, all the different planets move at night. Obviously, we're stationary and everything else in the universe is moving. So what happened was that it came to the point where the astronomers and the philosophers and everybody fought with one another. And there was a Roman Inquisition at the time, which represented the church and the Roman Catholic Church and the Pope. And they had the concept of the previous thought that the earth was this. They actually arrested. They talked with Galileo and censured him in 1615. Right? So he agreed, okay, I won't propagate this anymore. In 1632, 15 years later, he wrote a book called Dialogue Concerning the Two Chief World Systems. And in that, propounded and explained mathematically how the sun was in the middle and all the planets were going around it, and they actually arrested him. And for the last 9 years of his life, he spent in house arrest. So it's not that society just all of a sudden believed because, oh, Galileo came up with a good idea. And he proved it mathematically. It took time. So the way that we can apply this in our daily life and in this example of this Brahman, he didn't just all of a sudden sit down and read Bhagavad Gita wrong and get into ecstasy of reading Bhagavad Gita. It took time. And that gradual following the understanding, Mukhya read a very nice thing this morning that was describing what Prabhupada was saying, even if you don't have the taste, even if you don't understand, continue the process and it will come. It's like anything. This is what we're talking about. It's a law of the way things work. How if you don't believe in something, but you continue to go along with it because it makes a little sense to you, gradually it will come to make more and more sense as you hear and more about it. Another one's about math. When you first were a little child, you go to school and they teach you 1 + 1 = 2, and you don't really even know what that means until they show you there's one of these and there's one of these, and you put them together and now there's two. And then you advance to multiplication. 2 × 3, it's like you actually have to memorize multiplication tables. You don't really understand how they work, but you have to understand. And gradually working with the numbers, over time, you come to the point where you're an adult and it's second nature. It's working for you naturally. You don't even really think about it. It just comes because you've spent the baby steps learning. Now, what happens is that if somebody comes up to you with a completely foreign concept to what you've previously believed, then you're really in a quandary. What to do? Somebody said that there's a person who has an elephant head. His head got cut off, and it got replaced with an elephant head, and this is a god. Yeah. How can you possibly believe that unless you've taken the baby steps to understand how that can happen? So, the process of Krishna consciousness is such that the soul, which is a completely free, unencumbered, eternal conscious entity, enters a body and takes birth. And from the moment that birth takes place, even within the womb, what happens is that entity gets covered. And when it comes out of the womb, it experiences through the senses life in this material world with its pains and its pleasures, its rewards and its punishments. And naturally, every living entity wants to enjoy pleasure or pleasure seeking. And we come to believe that the experience through our senses is where pleasure lies because it's pleasurable. But what we don't realize is that for every pleasure, there's an opposite and equal reaction, and there's suffering. So the process of Krishna consciousness is completely foreign, but yet it's natural for the soul. And the point that's being brought out by following the instructions of a transcendental person, a person who's a pure devotee, a person who's conversant with transcendental knowledge, by hearing from that person and following their instructions. Now, according to, it's not just a, it's what we call a structural building block, this concept of hearing from the proper person. But just because it's a building block doesn't mean it's easy to understand or it's without depth and structure. When we say hearing from the right person, the natural question is, who is that? How do you find out who that person is, what that person is? And does such a person have the same ideas as another person who's transcendental? In our experience in the material world, you find one teacher, one intellectual, who knows a particular subject matter, and they differ from other people who know the same subject matter. They don't have the same realizations. They don't have the same understanding. They even differ in concepts, like Galileo. They were both astronomers. The person, the people that put him in jail and him were both studying, they're both philosophers and astronomers, both studying the sky, and they differed. So if something is truth, how can people have different opinions about it? So there's a nice interview where, it's the one in San Francisco on TV, where Srila Prabhupada was at a Rath Yatra. So the man asked him if they'd do an interview. And he said, now I understand, because he had talked to devotees and he had found out what our basic philosophy. He said, according to my understanding, you don't find too much difference between the Quran and the Bible and the Buddhist teachings and the Bhagavad Gita. Now, for most laymen, these are very different scriptures. But Srila Prabhupada said, yes, no, we don't find any difference because they're all leading to the same goal, love of God. How you apply that and how you do it may be different according to the culture and language and people you speak. But by following these teachings, one attains love of God. And the way that you ascertain if the teaching is bona fide is if the result is there, that you love God. So that's the concept in a nutshell. Now, in our daily life, how does this, how can we see what's going on? And I want to share the last 50 years in kind of like a sections. When I was young, when I first became a devotee, we were in Chicago. It was an old YMCA building in Evanston, Chicago. And they had a big swimming pool, and the temple room used to be a basketball court, but it was transformed into a temple like this. So whenever the BBT truck would come, they'd bring a whole truckload of books, and we'd put it in the area around the swimming pool, which was quite wide because it was YMCA, and all the books were there. And whenever a new book came out, oh my God, Chaitanya Charitamrita was coming out at that time. And we were all going out to the out to the airport and out on Sankirtan for 7-8 hours a day. But when a book came out, everybody wanted to take the day back and read that book. So it was like you'd spend 6 or 7 hours reading a book when it came out. And I was reflecting on that and wondering, I don't read 6 or 7 hours anymore, same book. Over time, what happened was that was in the 70s. Then in the 80s, I was going around to different places in Vrindavan, which is the holy place where Lord Krishna grew up. And it's hundreds of square miles in different temples. And at that time, there was no computers. So I would have to keep notes and I actually got a typewriter and would have to keep notes and all these papers. And the thing about typing, when you make a mistake, you have to write it out and then type it again. So that went on for several years until Burijan Prabhu invited me into his room one time. He said, look at this. And it was one of the first computers, huge big box with a little tiny screen. But when you typed, it had a word text processor in it, and you could just delete the letters and bring it back. So it made it much easier. And whatever you wrote down, you could just save on a little disk rather than all the paper and trying to keep it correlated and all your information from all the hundreds of places you're going. And then in the 90s, what happened was that the internet and email started going on. Now, when I first went to India, 1970s, to make a telephone call from India to the United States, you had to do what's called the trunk call. You would go to the telephone location and book a call with an operator. And then that operator would say, okay, it'll be a couple hours. Seriously. You'd sit in the office waiting and then say, oh, your call came through. And then you could sit and talk to somebody. So now all of a sudden in the 90s, you got the email where you can just type a letter and click it and it goes off. In 2004, my wife and I started producing audiobooks. Simultaneously, Brahmananda and Gargamuni were doing a lot of their propagation in Vrindavan. So we would converse about what people were liking, how they were doing, and people went from reading books to listening to audio. It was much easier. You could do it wherever. You could do it while you're driving, do it while you're listening to laundry, whatever you want to do. Recently, I talked with Gargamuni and Brahmananda before he left, and we were discussing how what's happened in society is that people don't read, they really don't listen, and as was discussed yesterday in the class, now how people converse with one another on the majority level, it's pretty much texting and Facebook. It's how people communicate. That's what's happened in society. So he was mentioning yesterday in class that the average tweet, the average text takes about 9 seconds to look at. Now, when I was a kid, they had these big studies where they were concerned about the attention span of people becoming regulated at 15 minutes because society in my generation was when color TV came out and all the kids were watching, and they would watch TV for 15 minutes, then they'd have an ad. Then they'd watch TV and then they'd have an ad. Then they'd watch TV and they'd have an ad every 15 minutes. So the attention span, the teachers were noticing, wow, these kids are like getting shorter and shorter attention spans. So what's happening now is that our attention spans are like really getting to the point where you don't spend much time on these baby steps, which help you understand a concept, which leads to another step, which leads to another step, which leads to another step. And people are very, in general, are very splayed out in their actual belief or determination to apply themselves to a particular concept. They can do their job, but now they even have this thing called multitasking. Multitasking doesn't mean that you can do a lot at one time. Neuroplasticity and modern science has analyzed what happens when a person does multitasking. They put that skull cap on people's heads with all the sensors and find out what's happening in the brain. You can't do more than one thing at a time. What you do is actually pay attention to one thing, then pay attention to another, then go back to that one you were paying attention to, then pay attention to another. You're only paying attention to one thing at a time, but it's not for very long. It's moving from one point to another. So the question arises, how can we go deep into a consciousness and enter into a meditative state and in this environment? It's challenging. Who sits and reads for 4 or 5 hours a day? They used to do that in society. That was the way it worked. But in today's modern society, it doesn't. So this process of spending an hour every morning, chanting Hare Krishna for a couple hours, taking prasadam, having festivals, cultural events that people can go to and all enjoy, outdoor festival with music and dance. It's very attractive and very practical method and way for learning and developing Krishna consciousness, because these messages are in themselves non-different than Krishna. Madan, can we get 1:2:17 on there? There's a nice verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam which explains this, how the process of hearing works. There's actually a science to it. Srinvatam svakata krishna punya shravana kirtana priyadantasto hyabhadrani vidunoti suhitsitam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the paramatma or the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. This is what happened to that Brahmin. That Brahmin, you can just leave that up, okay, Madan, for now. So the idea is that Krishna, the Lord, is within our heart with us. We're individual souls, and we're located locally in our body. But there's a common denominator in God. He's everywhere. And he's within each person's heart as what's called the super soul. So there's a soul and a super soul. It's compared to two birds in the same tree. And one is instructing the other, but the other has slight independence and can listen or not listen. And the idea in this concept that we're discussing, the structural building block we're discussing, is that when that individual soul comes in contact with a representative of God and hears from him through books, through tapes, through talking, then gradually that transformation of belief starts to develop and build. And the more you hear, the more you develop. Just like societies change their ideas, a person becomes purified and understands more and more about their spiritual self. Now, what the challenge is for devotees who want to help others is how to get their attention to these topics. So I wanted to share a little bit about my own program and my wife's program and what we're starting to do and what we've conceived of. And started doing it, and it's really, really wonderful. About a month ago, we started, And the idea is that Srimad Bhagavatam, this book, is recommended as the scripture for this particular day and age. It's advented, it's like a literary incarnation of God, specific for this time, place, and circumstance. And it was presented to a king who had 7 days to live. He was going to die in 7 days. So his spiritual master, Sukadev Goswami, spoke to him in a very structured manner. And it's described by the acharyas and the different spiritual masters that the book is like stepping stones. There's 12 cantos. And each canto has some of these structural building blocks within it. And as one studies one canto and then goes to the next canto and then goes to the third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, gradually the spiritual topics become more and more elevated. And the structure, just like learning math, you learn addition, then subtraction, then multiplication and division, and then algebra and calculus and physics. And it's the same basic concepts, but they expand. Or in nature, everything's in the seed. Everything, the entire tree. But it takes time as it comes out, one leaf at a time, one little sprout. So as it grows and develops, it gets strengthened and develops. So what we've conceived of is a program for today's age where we'll study 1 week per month, one structural building block from one of the cantos. Then for 3 weeks, people who are involved in the program can resonate, meditate, let that grow. And then the next month, we'll do the second canto for 1 week. And I'm making slideshows so that you can even do it on your app, on your phone. You can click in and read the and hear the class on that particular concept for 1 week. One time per week, we'll have 7 slideshows. And that way, because people, they really don't have time, but they can maybe listen for 10 minutes on their phone with the app. And then if they get time, go online and actually read it. And then the third month, go to the third canto. And the fourth month, go to the fourth canto. So we're still in the conceptual stage. But what I'm finding, just by studying first canto, there's so much nectar and it's so full. But we have to take each canto, each structural building block, and build upon it. So I made a little video just as an idea I wanted to present to everybody. And if anyone has interest in this or ideas or wants to help support it, then let us know. So this is a little, the ending part says go to sadhusangha.com. That's not the URL. That's not where we're at yet. We don't even have a website or anything like that. That will take time to develop. But I'm thinking about 6 months. Maybe we can get it together. Srimad Bhagavatam Japanese. So the idea is that, it's a little bit self-motivated. I'm going to study Srimad Bhagavatam this way, and I'm trying to, because I've only got a few years left, so this will give me a good opportunity to go deeper. And what I will think of at the time of death will take me to my future. So, and doing it in such a way that we can share it with others. And hopefully, we can come to this point like this Brahmin, where we actually find pleasure, ecstasy, tears in our eyes, swelling of hairs on end, shaking, and attain transcendental love by following, hearing, and following the instructions of our spiritual master, as others have done. Any questions or comments? Yes, Pavitra. Wait for the microphone, okay?
We've pretty much covered the importance of reading, hearing, and chanting, reading Prabhupada's book. I know at home for myself, when it comes to reading, you know, my mind is always telling me, no, go do this, I got to do that, no, I got to go here, I got to go there. Can you just, just touch on that, on how it's a meditation and the importance of really buckling down and getting these books read?
For me, the concept comes down to priority. What is one's priority? And priority is based on desire. What does a person really want foremost? We get conditioned and we get habituated to act in certain ways. And there's a general formula that can be applied. First is awareness. Then transformation. If a person isn't aware that they're sick, then why bother with trying to get better? Well, I have a friend, Mula Pakriti. She died several years ago, but the way she found out was her friend. They were in Vrindavan, and her friend was going to the Apollo Hospital in Delhi for a checkup. So she figured, okay, you know, why not? Good idea. 55, 52, 53 years old. They do like a whole body checkup in 6 hours at the Apollo Hospital, and it wasn't so expensive. So she said, I should probably do it. During her examination, they found out that she had a cancer that left her 1 year to live. Her life changed that day. Most people would. Her awareness was transformed. So what happens by hearing is that a person becomes more aware. This concept that we're talking about, hearing from the spiritual master, is still even misunderstood. It's not some mystic experience that all of a sudden knowledge enters one's consciousness as if just floats in there. No, the spiritual master gives instructions. You do this, follow these process, and then you'll get knowledge. Same as the math teacher. If you don't follow, if you don't learn, if you don't apply your attention to that which you want to learn, then how can you possibly expect to know it? You have to give it your attention. So it's a matter of priority and a matter of one's awareness of life, what it's meant for, our precarious position in this material world, our desire to really do something to get out. It takes our full attention. And then when one becomes more aware, then take these baby steps. For example, we all know it. That's why we're here. At least we have some interest. But applying yourself, like starting to come to the regular program, you've been doing that now for quite some time, it's become habituated. It's natural for you. We see it. Same thing if you just add 15 minutes. For me, it's morning time. Boy, after 11 o'clock in the day, finished. No more serious thought process goes on, and I'm 65 years old. It's not going to happen. diminished capacity, unfortunately. So I try to do everything I can on that level in the morning, and later on during the day have other things to do. So you might consider changing your schedule for reading. Don't try to read right before you go to bed. not a good time to really pay attention unless you have a young, fertile mind. But that's one suggestion. And then take those baby steps, and you'll see that gradually things will transform and change. Ramanya Prabhu.
Thank you, Dhruvaji. Nice lecture and the presentation. I just remember when Srila Prabhupada started using the dictaphone.
Uh-huh.
Translation. The Muni and Brahmananda gave it to him. And then he gives the example how the mouse makes a hole to live inside. And the snake comes in and eats the mouse and lives in the hole comfortably. So would you say all the technology in Krishna service, like you're doing in your presentation?
Yes, sir.
And that's
nice example.
The other example Prabhupada gives, he says, you should study my books 5 hours a day, like in universities, and then you have 10, 15 minutes recess.
People are studying a lot of time spent. Ramanya is from Mexico. And I was just talking with him. There are several devotees. Leelananda is another one from Brazil. They actually learned English by reading Srila Prabhupada's books because they want to know what it says, what it means, what is he really saying. To me, that's almost inconceivable, learning a language. He said that when he first started, he got an English-Spanish dictionary, and he got a Spanish Bhagavad Gita and an English Bhagavad Gita. And then he would sit there and go between the two and learn them. And then by Krishna's arrangement, he moved to Denver, where there was nobody who spoke Spanish. So he had to learn English. And in this way, again, we're back to that pattern of a society where how much time and attention it takes to actually learn a language. It's not something that comes because you're around people for a few days. It takes months. It takes even years to actually learn that. So this is a process where the soul, to become enlightened, to actually understand I'm a soul, what is my eternal relationship with God, takes time. It takes attention. Yes, Ramanya.
I was just wondering if you could briefly explain, especially for some of our guests, this, what is a spiritual master and what is his special position, how he's necessary in the process of spiritual life.
See if I can find the appropriate verses. Here is a good example. Right in the beginning, remember I told you Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the part that I studied. There are six questions that start the book. In Namasharanya, which is near present-day Lucknow, there's a big forest. And at that time, the sages had gathered, hundreds of thousands of sages had gathered to perform a sacrifice. And the eldest, most respected person amongst them was chosen as the speaker. Why? Here are the qualities that he had that they chose, why they chose him. Respected Sutta Goswami, you are completely freed from all vice. So the first qualification is that he was freed from any sinful activity. Described in the purport, in this age, there are four basic sinful activities. Illicit sex, means sex not for propagation of children, sex just to enjoy it, sex not in marriage. It's not proper, according to God, according to the present day civilization in America, that is not true. Even it's just not true. So again, we're back to baby steps that have to be taken, and even in one's life. We're all brought up in the West and had those concepts that, especially the hippie era, it takes time to transform. and understand things why and more clearly. Animal slaughter, meat eating, intoxication of all kinds, and gambling. So Suta Goswami wasn't engaged in any of those activities. You are well versed in the scriptures, famous for religious life, and in the Puranas and histories as well, for you have gone through them under proper guidance and have also explained them. So the spiritual master must also be knowledgeable in the scripture. Being the eldest Vedantist, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is an incarnation of Godhead, and you know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. So, in other words, he's a self-realized soul who learned the science of transcendence from another realized soul. Their opinions don't differ. Truth exists beyond this world. And we have to find someone who knows about that dimension and that realm in order to learn about it in this realm. Basic concept. Yes, Prabhu.
What was the verse there that you just read from?
I can hear.
What was the verse that you just quoted from there?
Oh, the number? First chapter. Started with 6, 7, 8, and 9. Yeah. It's the introductions to the sages' questions to Suta Goswami. Tied to the Brahmin who was reading Bhagavad Gita and attained transcendental ecstasy, Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna.